Session number 29022.
Reel 3, Robert Brown, 1st of June 2006. You were just mentioning that you were on board the ship during D-Day. Do you have any recollections of when the crew of the Belfast just found out that they were off to D-Day? What was the feeling on board?
Well, we were going south. We didn't know where we were going. We weren't told, until we were actually on our way. And of course, the minesweepers went in to sweep a channel for the invasion, and we were right behind them. And Belfast was responsible for one section of coastal bombardment. And the idea was that we would go in early and knock out as many of the coastal whatever they called them, coastal defenses. We were supposed to knock out as much as we could and keep a rolling bombardment ahead of the troops.
Did the captain make an announcement to let you know on the...
Yeah, at the last minute. And I remember the invasion was held up one day because of the bad weather, and decided that they had to go ahead. The troops, the people were all in the ships, and you couldn't hold them up anymore, and they were afraid that word would get out, so they decided to go on the 6th, and that's what happened, and we went in. I remember because I spent a lot of time in that shell room, because it was constant bombardment, and I remember at one point being spelled off. And being on the upper deck when the guns were firing, it was a lot of noise. And
could you see anything from the upper deck? What could you see any of the other ships?
You could see a lot of ships. You couldn't see much on shore because we were a mile offshore. My friend, brother-in-law, he was up on the... his position was damage control, up on the bridge area, and he was a searchlight operator. And he saw a little more than I did. But the Germans would come in over where the ships were and drop mines at night. And there was a gun away off to the... to the north of the beaches, that they would wheel out and they'd pick a line towards the ships, and they'd drop a shell, and then they'd drop one closer, and they'd drop one closer, and the ship would pick up and move and hit a mine. And I remember seeing... I remember seeing a destroyer go down. It hit a mine, broke in half, and it went down like a V. I remember seeing that. And we sent one of our ship's boats over to... There were a number of ships that did the same thing, but we sent a ship boat over to try and rescue as many as possible. And... another time, I recall that because of the facilities we had on board, that a number of severe casualties were brought to the ship for medical attention and surgery, and some of them didn't survive. And I remember seeing a bosun stitching a body up in canvas. I remember seeing that. Never forgot that. But my friend saw more than I did. But the continued firing of the guns has affected my hearing. And about 6 years ago, the Canadian Veterans Affairs gave me a pension for my hearing. It's a small monthly income, but I'm not so concerned with that as I was of getting two good hearing aids, and I need them. They're really helpful.
Was the shell room again your action station during D-Day? Mm-hmm. Were you down there for most of the time?
Mm, most of the time.
How long could you be down there for action stations? Was it continual?
Well, it was a little different at Normandy. It seems to me we had watches then, that the watch, there'd be so many people down in the shell room and passing shells, but it wasn't as heavy. I do remember that they put up a notice board. We sent a signalman ashore, and he met up with a soldier and a jeep, and they went in as forward observers and signaled back to the ship. And they would call the fall of shot and report when they asked for a broadside and find out where they'd hit and report the number of tanks that we hit or the number of trucks that we hit. They had a scoreboard that kept on the ship. So we knew that we were doing some good. That was after the troops were ashore, after the bombardment of the coastal defences.
Did the sort of day-to-day routine change then? You said you were on normal watch, so was it 4 hours on or 4 hours off, or did the routine change slightly?
I am not sure. My memory on that isn't clear, except that I was, on one occasion at least, on the upper deck and saw the guns fire. So I wasn't in the shell room right at that time. And I know that the light bulbs over here, I don't know about these in the room, but on the ships, they're like the automobile lamps we have at home. They've got two prongs on them. You push them in and give them a turn. And when the guns fired on the mess decks below, it would shake out half the light bulbs. They'd just snap out of the sockets and break on the deck. And they were always replacing light bulbs when the guns were firing.
How did the ship, when all the guns were firing, how did the ship feel? Did the ship move, or could you?
Oh, the vibration was heavy. In fact, if you look at the Belfast now, you'll see that the wiring is fastened to the bulkheads by studs and brackets, and there's nuts on it, and it's screwed up tight, and the wiring is just lined along the bulkhead. By the time we were finished in July, the vibration had caused a lot of those studs to snap off, and the wiring was hanging in loops in a lot of places. It's all been replaced now, but at that time, that's what happened. Yeah, there was a lot of vibration. And I'm told that when a ship fired its main guns on a broadside, when they were firing directly off the beam, that it would actually move the ship sideways in the water a number of feet. I've heard as much as 12 feet on battleships.
How long were you actually part of the bombardment force? How long was the ship?
Well, from the 6th of June until, I think it was very close to the 15th of July. It was very close to the 15th of July, because I was home by the 1st of August.
And was it a continual sort of action? Was it quite?
Yeah, it was. The ship would move from one place to another along the coast, and give the support where they could. So it was a continuous thing. We were sort of like, the ship was sort of like field artillery, and they moved back and forth where they were needed.
Did the captain keep you informed of what was going on, or was it just on a day-by-day?
A day-by-day thing that we were told what we were going to be doing, and so we had an idea. It was very good. I thought that we were well informed about, we got the news that we needed to know.
And when you returned to England, where did you return to? Which port did you go back to from D-Day? Were you straight onto shore leave then? Did you have leave after, or did you?
When we went back from D-Day, I cannot remember the port we went to. I remember we were at North Shields on one occasion, and we were at Newcastle on Tyne on another occasion, but I don't. My memory isn't clear on that anymore.
But did you have to go straight back into service, or did you have some shore leave after D-Day? Or?
Oh, after D-Day, we went right back to the Canadian Naval Base. Then they were sent back to the Queen Mary Dock to New York, and we got a troop train, went back to Canada. We went to Halifax, and very soon after we got to Halifax, we were sent home on leave.
So D-Day was actually your last period of service on the Belfast?
Yes.
And did your friend leave D-Day as well with you? He came back on the Queen Mary with you?
You know, this is a problem. When we got our medals after the war, he got a set of different medals than I did, and I didn't understand it. And now, that's something I was supposed to find out if I could. If there was any way that I could find out the ship's company at Normandy, who was on the ship at Normandy, because somehow the records got messed up. Now, he was with me all the way through my service on Belfast, but somehow Canadian records got messed up. They show that he was only on the Belfast for 79 days, and so instead of getting the France-Germany star with the Atlantic bar that I did, he got the Defense Medal instead, and he has queried it, and they say in Canada that he was not on the ship at Normandy. And he was. But somewhere, the records are wrong. He has been trying to get it corrected, and he's getting no help in Canada. And I think he has written Britain to see if he can get any information here. He's been in touch with somebody over here who has sent him information. He's getting information about the ship. He's not a member of the group, but he's getting some information.
So after D-Day, you travelled back on the Queen Mary, and you travelled back to Canada.
Yeah.
And then did you go on to another ship after the Belfast?
We commissioned the Uganda into the Canadian Navy, and we left immediately. That would be in October. We left immediately and came to Scapa Flow. We went to Newcastle on Tyne to get some more modern equipment, and then we went down through the Mediterranean. We did our shakedown cruise out of Alexandria, And we kept going. We went through the canal and down to Ceylon and then to Australia, around the bottom of Australia. And then we went up and joined the British Pacific Fleet at the Admiralty Islands at Manus.
And which year was this in, sorry?
And that was in 44.
It was still 44.
And we were there until the end of the war in Japan.
Can you remember where you were when war finished? When?
Well, actually, we left and came back to Canada 2 weeks before the end of the war, before Japan surrendered. So I was back home. The day that I was home, 2 days, and the war was over.
And can you remember how, what sort of feelings or who?
Oh, yeah. I got a message from the ship. I got a signal from the ship, said, at the end of your 28 days, take 30 days for Pacific leave. And during that period, then they sent me another signal, told me at the end of the 30 days I was to report to the Winnipeg Naval Base for discharge. I went there and they said, "Oh, we owe you 14 days from somewhere." I don't know whether they really did. I think maybe they just wanted me out of the way for a few weeks. Anyway, at the end of that time, I went in, and 2 hours later, I was a civilian. And that was in 45. I went back to high school, finished my high school in a night course, went to first year university, and decided I'd had enough, and I went looking, and on the basis of my 3 days firefighter training, I spun that into 35 years in the fire service in Canada.
Were you sad to be off of ships or out of the Navy, or were you?
Our ship set a record for the Canadian Navy of 142 days at sea in one stretch. Without, I think they said continual steaming for 142 days. While we were with the British fleet, we were being refueled and rebuilt and everything, doing it at sea. And we strung cables between the supply ships, and they sent over all the equipment we needed. So we didn't stop. And when I got home, before I got that signal to report to the naval base for discharge, I was asked if I would like to sign on permanent Navy. Would I like to sign on for a 2-year interim period as the Navy reduced in size, or would I like a discharge? And I thought about it, and I thought, someday I will probably want to get married. And long stretches at sea, as we just come from, wouldn't be very conducive to a marriage. So I said I wanted a discharge, and they gave it to me. Later on, late in my career, I think about after my 25th year working for the military, after my 15th year working at the for the Army as a firefighter, fire chief, I went to Ottawa and worked for a very special branch of the Navy. And I sort of got to know a lot about the Navy then. And I discovered that the peacetime Navy was spending a lot of time in port, living in married quarters and so on. And if I had had any idea that that's what it would have been like, I would have never got out of the Navy, because I really, my pre-war experiences, Sea Cadet and so on, I developed a real love for the Navy and for the sea, and I years later I was very disappointed I hadn't stayed in.
Did you develop a sort of a love for the ships you were on? Did you become attached to the ships, or was just another
no,
ship?
No. They were, you grew attached to them. You really did. I really enjoyed that. That's why it was so important for me to come back and go aboard the Belfast again. Well, we've spent how many days on the ship have we been there and really enjoyed it. Been all over it. The only thing, because of the way the ship is being used now, I never got back into some of the after areas that I'd been in. I remember that a Marine, I wanted to know how to play a trumpet, and a Marine gave me a trumpet and a book, a teacher he called it, and I used to go back to the after gyro room and practice playing the trumpet back there. Unfortunately, that Marine got drafted off the ship and he needed his instrument back, and I never got to be really good, but I did enjoy it while I had the use of it.
Were you quite sad then when you left the ship, when you were drafted off the ship? Was it sort of a feeling of this was my first ship? And
yeah, I was sorry to leave the ship, but on the other hand, I was going back to Canada. I was going to see the family again and try and get reestablished. But I remember I told you about those Dear John letters, and before I came overseas, my girlfriend and I were talking about getting married. This was going to happen after I got back. But she went to university and she met a fellow at the university, and I got one of those Dear John letters. After we got back to England after the North Cape. And I remember actually standing on the forecastle looking at the water and deciding, you know, was I just going to jump over and end it? Or I did. I thought about that. And then I thought, hell with it. There'll be other girls. And so there were. When we were out in the Pacific, we went ashore at Manus, which was a place where sailors, the fleet would be there, and the sailors could get ashore, and they could get beer when they were ashore, and you could swim in the lagoon and so on. And I heard that this particular plant that the natives ate it. And I thought, well, I'll try it. So I cut off a stalk, and it was kind of pithy stuff in it. And I ate some of that. And I only knew half the story. Yes, the natives ate it, but they boiled it first. And evidently, there was a poison in it. And after I ate it, my esophagus was paralyzed for about 3 days. It was almost as though it was a cardboard tube. I had a lot of trouble. I went to the sick bay, but they didn't know what to do for it. And I just toughed it out, and I got over that. But I learned a lesson. You better know what you're eating before you eat it.
What sort of ship was it that you were on in the...
I was on the Uganda.
What?
The Uganda was a colony-class cruiser. It was part of the British Navy, and it had been in action at Salerno and had been glider-bombed, and the bomb went through the after part of the ship and exploded underneath. It killed I don't know how many men in the engine room, but it knocked out three of the engines, three of the shafts. It limped back to Gibraltar, and in Gibraltar, they got it in dry dock, and they got out a number of the bodies, and they put a concrete patch in it. And after that, they left a skeleton crew on board to operate the ship, and they sent it to the States on one prop, which meant that it was traveling at low speed and without any escort. And it made it across safely and got to Charleston. In Charleston, they dry docked it, and they took out the patch, and they got the remainder of the bodies out there. And then the ship was repaired, and I guess it was about a year later, because that happened before Canada made arrangements with the Royal Navy to get one of the ships. And so the arrangement was that when the Uganda was repaired, then it would be commissioned into the Canadian Navy. And that's what happened. That's how I became part of it. But the it had been a British cruiser in the Med.
So was the layout pretty similar to the to that of the Belfast?
Yeah. Quite similar.
And did you have the same job on board, or did you have a different job?
No. On that ship, I was operating the main electrical control switchboard. So I was balancing, my job was to balance the distribution of power on the ring main and keep the generators balanced so that the power was always even.